Dr. Ken Kronos is with us. He studies a lot of the medical journals to bring us up to date on some of the collective wisdom that comes from these studies, so that you can know how some of the work may affect you. And again, the studies are gone over, and not necessarily, we're not trying to get into the weeds here, just give you enough practical information so you can go and get some more info from your doctor. Your job, take care of yourself. Our job is to lead you in that direction as much as we can. All right, so Ken is a cardiologist. He practices at Lake Cardiology. That's his clinic in Mount Dora, Florida. Been on the air with me for a number of years, has brought lots of help and advice to millions of people. So let's just check out one of these items this week that comes from the sources that you check out, Ken. The eclipse this past week, people looking, even pictures of the president looking up at the moon and the sun, and we were all told, don't do that. Put on some kind of glasses or just don't look directly into it. Anyway, if you were an eclipse viewer who may have damaged your eyes, Ken has some advice for you.
Sure, Doug. People who did not use specialized glasses to view the eclipse this past Monday, they're experiencing blurry vision, light sensitivity, or headaches. They should visit an ophthalmologist, that's an eye doctor, as soon as possible because you may have damaged your eyes. Again, some of the symptoms of an unhealthy eye full of the sun's rays are blurry vision, holes or spots in vision, light sensitivity, pain or headaches since viewing the eclipse. You want to get this checked out, get it diagnosed, and see if it needs to be followed up.
Well, what sort of things happen if you do have that damage? If you have a torn retina or you're affecting your retina, what happens to your eyesight or to your eyeballs?
Well, it depends how severe the sunburn is of the retina, or there are other parts of the heart that can also be burned. And just in general, you should never, ever look directly at the sun. And some of these things can be helped, but some of them are not going to be helped.
Isn't it amazing? The sun's 93 million miles away from us. And we're this little teeny planet that gets the benefit of that huge ball of gases that are burning. And if you were able to look into some of the telescopes, or you saw some of the video or the stills of what the sun looked like as we were going into the eclipse, the huge, big boiling pots of, 29 jillion million degrees.
It's a pretty hot place.
Gases that are exploding together. What brought them? I mean, it's just fascinating to think, how'd this thing come together? How did all these gases assemble in a ball and start exploding and get us to the point where we are now? The sun in how many billions of years, maybe 9, 10, 11 billion years of existence.
A pretty amazing architect, isn't it?
I mean, if you don't believe, and this has nothing to do with medicine, but maybe it does. You think about your body and how wonderfully it functions if you take care of it. That's a grand design coming from a mind a lot bigger than ours.
Absolutely.
Or from some entity that is certainly greater than ours. And so the formulation of these gases and the burning of the sun, I think I read once 93% of the energy in the sun is still there before it expands out and explodes and eats up all of the planets in the solar system.
That's
right. Which
is
what happens. Well, I don't know that you and I are going to have to worry much about it. Anyway, but it just is, it just so goes with the beauty of nature and the health of our bodies and what a fantastic opportunity we're given to live a long, healthy, happy, I mean, long, 120 to 140 years. That's what you must have studied that when you were in school. Isn't that what they tell you? That the body, if we weren't so focused on imperfections and eating bad food and doing bad things to ourselves like smoking and that sort of thing, our bodies would easily last 120 to 140 years. Did they teach you that when you went to whatever cadaver school you went to?
They speculated on that, and hopefully they're correct.
What's the oldest patient you've ever treated at Lake Cardiology as a heart specialist, or the oldest person that ever came to
you? I have treated a few people in the 100 to 110 range.
You have?
Yes.
And is there, what happens at that point? The heart's just tired because it's been beating for 100 years and it just worn out? How does that work? What happens?
Essentially, they often eventually will succumb to coronary disease, mm-hmm. and it just is delayed. And the common denominator is they're not obese. They're slim.
Yeah. Yep.
And they don't have high blood sugar. They don't have high cholesterol. Their weight is low. Their blood pressure is low, and they're active in most, and they're also upbeat people.
Yeah. Upbeat. All right. So the one thing in there that you mentioned that I'll use myself as a guinea pig, I think my sugar number is 5.6.
Your A1C.
Yeah.
That's
and
good.
So what does it have to be in order to live to be 100 or 110? What would you say the A1C needed to be? Look at these markers. You get a blood test every year, folks. Talk to your doctor about this and have him give you the advice that Ken's about to give me.
That is definitely a good place to be. You want it in the normal range, and there's some little jiggle from lab to lab, but under 5.8 is usually under 5.8. You know, the mid fives to lower, that's usually good.
What number are you likely to encounter having a problem with diabetes?
Well, diabetes is classically defined by a single blood sugar, and now more generally by this A1C, which is an average of blood sugars over almost 3 months. And a fasting blood sugar above 100 is pre-diabetes, over 125 is diabetes, and then there are numbers that correspond to A1C, sometimes a little jiggle from lab to lab, but those are pretty strict. And the first thing you want to do when your numbers start going up, now we're talking about type 2 diabetes, is to get down to ideal body weight and then get into an exercise program when the doctor says it's okay, and eliminate or dramatically reduce the white flour products. You know, people think their blood sugar goes up because of eating too much sugar. It's actually eating too much white flour.
Yeah. Bread, rolls,
white
cupcakes,
bread.
White bread in birthday cakes, in pies, and all that kind of stuff. Muffins, all the yummy things. Stay away from them. That's what you got to do.
They're treats.
Yeah, they are. Once in a while, okay. All the time, not good. So if like you stop in at a Dunkin' Donuts every morning and you have a muffin and a cup of coffee, probably not the smartest
thing.
You're
not going to make it to 120.
No. Okay, so there you go. And then whatever. Let me just back up a little bit to the vision discussion. Would you define, please, the difference between an ophthalmologist and an optometrist?
And also, the range of 5.7 to 6.4 is usually thought of as pre-diabetes.
Yeah.
And then above 6.4, diabetes. And that corresponds to the 100 to 125 of a single blood sugar as pre-diabetes. And above 125 is diabetes.
So get it below 5. That's my goal, is to get my number below.
Below 5.7.
Well, it's below 5.7 now, but I want to be down above.
And then you're okay. It's hard to get it below 5.
Yeah. All right.
Ophthalmologist, optometrist, optician.
Yes.
Boy, those are confusing terms. But ophthalmologist is actually a medical doctor, an MD. That person went to medical school. That person did an internship in residency in the specialty of the eye.
So they're different, like a psychiatrist and a psychologist. One of them has an MD and the other doesn't.
Psychiatrist has the doctorate degree.
Yeah, okay.
The ophthalmologist has doctorate degree. So they can prescribe medicines. They can do eye surgery. They can do it all. And then the optometrist, if you want to get your eyes examined, they do a good job. If you need a prescription for eyeglasses, they do especially a good job. A lot of ophthalmologists, although they're trained in writing out the prescription for your glasses, a lot of them are not doing it anymore. They're delegating that to the optometrists, who are very skilled at doing that. I just saw one myself a few months ago, and getting ready before I had my driver's test just to get mine checked to see where I was. And I actually didn't need glasses for my eye exam, but
I've never seen you with glasses.
Well, I actually got them for computer work and for close-up reading, but I did not need them for my to get my driver's license.
Did you get them at the drugstore? The magnifying glasses?
No, these are
prescriptions. Yeah, all right, okay.
They're serious, and they're just make it a little easier to do some reading with the computer. Yeah. So-called computer glasses, they actually work pretty well. And the optician are the people who is one step down from the optometrist. They fit the glasses. They're the people who you see in the optical store who will bring you out the glasses and adjust them for you. They may take your prescription and convert them into glasses. Those are the people who you meet and help you actually get your glasses.
Good Day Health Hour with Dr. Ken Kronhaus from Lake Cardiology. If you would like to visit with Ken, other than listening to him in this circumstance and downloading the podcast at blogtalkradio.com/Good Day Health, here's what you do. You call 352-735-1400. How about that? Easy to remember. 352, that's easy. 735, that's easy. 1400, what could be easier than that? And if you've thought of going to visit that part of Florida and you're going through some sort of issue with your health, why not do two for the price of one, or maybe three? Go to the Space Coast, go to that little resort that's there in Orlando or Kissimmee, and then go visit Ken. He's the most important cog in that wheel. Lake Cardiology's number again for an appointment to see Ken is 352-735-1400. All right, so let's go to the advice department. I use myself as a guinea pig often. Kara, who's at the controls in our studio in Washington, has been having a couple of issues that a lot of people actually have had this summer, Ken. It seems that those of us who think we only get colds in the wintertime are finding that belief to be bogus, because there are lots of summer colds this year. Why?
Well, there are viruses around year-round, and bacteria also. Some just tend to be a little stronger in the winter. And also, there's a lot of question about whether it's either a cold or is it an allergy, because certainly in the summer there are things pollinating that are not around during the winter. So you have to untangle that maze.
Well, I've certainly had those issues for the last 4 or 5. I've had allergies for decades, but last 4 or 5 years they seem to have gotten worse. So I listened to Kara talking, and she sounds nasally, like she has a cold, but you're saying she probably doesn't. She's probably got an allergy.
She sounds like she has a combination. That she at least has some sinus congestion, and I didn't get that far to figure it out the cause. It was just actually trying to help her open up her sinuses. At this point, it probably doesn't matter.
Really? Wait, it doesn't matter in how you take care of it, what the problem is.
At this point, we just need to get her sinuses open and see what happens. It's probably not an allergy, because it's not something she always has.
Yeah. So the Medipod, is that good?
Well, okay. Well, now we're gonna give away our HIPAA, I guess, and we'll talk about her.
I always give up mine. Didn't have to give up hers.
You can't give up hers. So we're gonna.
Yeah. In general, let's say we know this young lady who has this.
Let's talk about sinus health. The key to sinus health is keeping the system open. And if you are noticing any congestion in your sinuses, the first thing is not to treat with antibiotics. The first thing is to keep it open. And one of the best ways is just by irrigating it. I think in everybody's home, you should have some saline water, sterile. I'm not giving them out a plug, a commercial. My favorite is Ocean Spray. It's a sterile saline you can get in the grocery store or in the pharmacy. And when you are feeling any congestion, you just want to tilt your head back and then to the side, and you will discover on yourself where the sweet spot is, where you get optimum circulation. You start tasting that salt water in your throat. That's a good sign. It means the whole system's open. Do the other side. And do that frequently during the day. One of the other tricks I was suggesting was that when you're in the shower, use the shower water to do it also. Just don't drown. You want to close one nostril and tilt your head back a little bit to the side and just let it run in, and you're irrigating your sinuses. And that's the first step in just keeping good sinus. We were talking a little bit, if this gets further, sometimes we use Afrin for a couple of days, and then sometimes we'll also use a little bit of Sudafed as a decongestant. Usually, if you do that, you can avoid an antibiotic. Only when it starts really becoming beyond just opening up the circulation will you need an antibiotic.
All right. So there's that bit of special information. As I said, I don't mind using myself as a guinea pig. And as a matter of fact, I found myself since last we spoke sort of at a loss for my usual energy quotient. And I think even though it sounds a little hooey for some, a part of it can be contributed to the solar eclipse, the moon phases that it's been going through this month. And in fact, the Mercury is in retrograde. There's some of that. But I also think that the practical side of it is that I whacked myself pretty good on the head last week and had a cut on my forehead and swollen bump and lump there. I've done this before in my life on the farm. There's lots of stuff going on. You bump your head here and there. But I really felt for a couple of days out of it. I felt my vision was a little blurred.
How did you do this?
I hit my head on a piece of equipment. Did I tell you this off the air? Maybe I didn't even tell you this. I was working on a piece of farm equipment, and I whacked my head on something as I was going to reach for a tool to fix a thing on a tire, on an axle. I whacked my head on one of the pieces of steel that holds the frame together. And I did it. I hit it because I was, you know, sort of focused on going down. I went down with my usual zeal, and I really whacked my forehead. And so I went to see the doctor on Friday, Dr. Bordick, you know him. He said I had a scintillating sarcoma, which you probably know off the top of your head, as he did, is some kind of blood flow restriction that lasts for a little while.
Flickering lights?
Yeah, a little, you know, I was a little dizzy and I was a little nauseous and then I felt okay. But I took Advil for three or four, I don't know, 5 days because I had a constant headache that was bothering me. And then I thought, well, maybe I got to go see the chiropractor because things, I hit it so hard, I'm sure I knocked some stuff out of adjustment.
You didn't lose consciousness, did you?
No, not at all. No.
Okay.
No, I kept right on with what I was doing. It just has been bothersome.
And that may have not been the best thing in retrospect, right?
How's that? Not to lose consciousness?
No, not to keep doing what you were doing and, not, and just, you know, kind of go and rest.
Well,
and
I think I slowed down a little when I was driving down the street.
I bet you would have recovered more quickly and you would have been more comfortable had you just
sat it out
and went in and just took it easy and
really
and you know took the rest of the day off.
Mm-hmm. Well,
after that hard a hit
might have been. Yeah, but it's taken a while for it,
but
what actually it. I guess I'm curious as to what actually goes on in your brain. Is there's a swelling that's on the surface. It's not the brain that swells. It's what's the...
Hopefully not. It's just a matter of how hard you hit it, but there's probably just a little bit of swelling. And we are so sensitive, as you discovered in that area. Any change from what it absolutely is accustomed to, you will sense in an amplified manner.
Yeah, right.
And that's why just taking it easy for the rest of after that happens just tends to make this go away all that much smoother.
Mm-hmm. All right. So when you do stuff like that, you do a little, it goes a long way in essence.
Everything's amplified when you hit that area.
Right. Yeah. All right. But it's pretty much back to normal now.
Good.
Well, I was thinking about what you said with regard to the solar eclipse and looking at the sun. I had sunglasses on. I put my fingers together so I could just look at just one little crack. And I don't know whether that, the combination
you
of all these other
things. Plus your fingers, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just to make sure I wasn't looking at it, because I have one of those pair of special glasses, but...
you did or did not?
I did not. I had sunglasses. But I just wonder about the combination of all of these things, if that didn't make me a little dizzy for a little bit. Just all of those things together.
Did you feel as though did you feel different after Monday, the eclipse?
Yeah, I think I felt when I was trying to look at it a little bit. It was very cloudy in New England, so we didn't see much anyway. But that's what I was saying so early in our earlier conversation. It's so strong. We have no idea. Here's this thing. Imagine a flame 93 million miles away that provides the sustenance for our entire existence. That's what it is. You know, without it, we have nothing. You don't have the photosynthetic process. You don't have the stuff that's growing out of the ground. It always goes to the sun. Have you noticed that? Ever plant anything and maybe put it behind a building and it'll grow, but it'll keep trying to go around the building to get to the sun? Ever notice that?
Absolutely. It will seek it.
Yeah, right. So It's just it is kind of an amazing thing, but looking at it, it's not a good thing to do.
No.
And
with an eclipse or not with an eclipse?
Well, any. You don't look at it at all.
Exactly.
It'll just, it's not good for you. You try it and it feels weird. Yeah. Well, it's you're being told by your body.
It was not meant for our eyes.
No, exactly. Not ready for prime time. It's time for us to spend a moment or two on this important study, how lights at night can increase a woman's risk for breast cancer. So if you live in an area, there's a lot of outdoor lighting, you may want to reconsider where you go, where you live. Well, this is a study. What comes of this, Ken?
Well, this is an interesting study out of Harvard that looked at light measured by satellite images, and it correlated the more intense the light measured from where you live by a satellite image, the more frequent was breast cancer. And it's a little hard for me to interpret this data because this doesn't actually tell us what an individual person is exposed to. It tells us how much light is being measured from a satellite high above the Earth from the area that you live at. But it's interesting because we all have dark and light cycles in our body. You know, we're usually expecting about 12 hours of sunlight, 12 hours of dark in our body. Mm-hmm. And melatonin does come on in the dark. Melatonin has been shown to have some anti-cancer effects. I wouldn't recommend taking it to get rid of cancer, but melatonin in the body, naturally secreted, has some effects. And there was about a 15% increase in those who were exposed to a lot of natural light in their neighborhoods compared to those who had minimal. So it's an interesting study. It's just, you know, I don't know how to conclude anything from it other than make sure that you don't confuse your body and make sure you keep it as much as possible in these dark and light cycles that it was intended to follow.
Well, sometimes if you have an iPhone, a television, laptop screens, all those produce that light. So get them out of your bedroom. Right? That's been the advice for years and years and years.
Correct.
Cover them up if you can't get them out of your, and then eat foods like pineapples and bananas and oranges and sweet corn. Anything yellow, I think, is good, right?
Affects melatonin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, yeah. And melatonin itself, I used to take melatonin a little bit to help me get to sleep, and I had really bad dreams. I don't know what, maybe it was too concentrated.
You took it too close to going to bed. Melatonin's really better a couple hours before you go to bed.
Mm. Limit caffeine and alcohol intake. That seems to be common sense stuff, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Before you go to bed?
Absolutely.
Why'd you get yourself all jigged up on any kind of caffeine and alcohol? Just gives you bad nightmares. So a couple of items here in terms of what the latest... I suppose this week we could call this the warning segment, Ken. Danger, danger. Children who use e-cigarettes are more likely to then try tobacco. So this is the sort of backward. The idea of using e-cigarettes was to get people off of it. But apparently, if you haven't started smoking yet and you think it's cool to try one of these things, then you're going to go in the wrong direction. Is that right?
You have almost figured it out. Very good.
Thank you.
Is that a tobacco control this week, Mom and Dad? You got to watch those teens. For those who already smoke, e-cigarettes seem to be a safer option, as Doug was suggesting. However, the news this week is that for those who do not smoke, using e-cigarettes dramatically increases the probability of smoking a cigarette within just a year. For teenagers who have never smoked, the use of e-cigarettes is a strong predictor that within 12 months, they will try a conventional cigarette.
Now, the new commissioner of the FDA has made a fairly bold announcement. The FDA wants to lower nicotine in cigarettes. I suppose maybe it would be nice if they just eliminated cigarettes altogether. Can you imagine passing a law? I'm laughing because all the money that comes from the tobacco companies to influence through lobbyists, the members of Congress, it would be kind of interesting to see them squirm if somebody actually came up, had the balsam to go to Congress and say, okay, we're going to ban cigarettes and see where that went.
What a concept.
Yeah. But anyway, the food and drug people want to lower nicotine. Nicotine is the source of the problem, is it not? The tobacco is bad, but the nicotine is what gets you hooked and makes you want to go back again. Is that right?
It's a major problem. It's not the only toxin that's inhaled, but it's a major
tar, all the things that are in
there. But it's still about 20% of the population uses it daily, and you wonder why.
So how does it increase the risk of lung cancer? And what do they call it? COPD, the
emphysema.
Pulmonary problems. Yeah, emphysema. My mother died of it, so I guess I know firsthand. But in general, how have things changed? My mother died in 1971. So what has changed in terms of what they use to get people to smoke? Well, cigarettes are more dangerous now than they ever were, aren't they?
Well, nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed is that less people are smoking. But you smoke, you're going to get emphysema, you're going to likely get lung cancer.
So as a cardiologist, how frequently...
And heart disease and heart attacks.
Right. So what percentage of the population that comes to see you for help with cardio problems are smokers?
Well, of the smokers...
Or have been.
Well, if I can just turn that around a little bit. Okay. Of the smokers, a lot of them come eventually to us because it plaques up their circulation to their heart as well as to their brain, and they get either heart attack or stroke. But certainly in a day, if you spend a day with me, of the people that I see, not all of them have ever smoked.
Not all of them.
Right, because people with diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol issues, family history, these are all other risk factors for what you're talking about, coronary artery disease. So smoking's not the only one, but it's probably, along with diabetes, the worst one.
Yeah, I would have thought. The healthiest part, let's talk about something good here.
Good, yes.
The healthiest part of an avocado. Is that the seed?
Exactly. This is out of the American Chemical Society meeting just this week. We know the avocado has many health benefits. The yellow-green flesh inside the fruit, it's packed with essential vitamins and nutrients and is a good source of the healthy fats. But the news this week, Doug, is that part of the avocado that's normally thrown in the trash that may actually be the most valuable part, it's the husk of avocado seeds. They're packed with previously unrecognized compounds that may be valuable new medicines in the future. You often want to ask me, where do these chemicals come from? Well, here's a new source.
Yeah, there you go.